the most iconic voices in golf are back to save the day and ready to entertain in their newly weekly video podcast. Costas and McCord, off their rocker.
Costas and McCord, off their rockers. Mike Abram here with you on a U.S. Open post-breakdown. I got Peter and Gary who are going to talk about the U.S. Open, L.A. Country Club, Wyndham Clark, and the broadcast, and give you their two cents on what's going on. And then we're going to have a great tip from Peter, who's going to help us with our swing again. Thanks to our sponsor, Swing U, our presenting sponsor. Check out the Swing U app. Some incredible, great tools on there to help with your game. Our technology sponsor, Foresight Sports, Quad Pro, Sim in a Box. And thanks so much for you, the viewer. We've got hundreds of thousands of views now. We've got thousands and thousands of subscribers. Remember, if you haven't, please subscribe and share with a friend. Give us your comments. We're talking to everybody out there who's given us their comments. And hit the notification bell to not miss an episode. So let's get going. Peter, how did you think LA Country Club North did this weekend? And give me your initial thoughts about the U.S. Open.
You know, I don't know that it played as hard as I thought it was going to play initially. Doing the Riviera tournament each year, Gary and I and Ian Baker Finch got a chance to play there after all of the alterations made by Gil Hans. And I thought it was a ball buster, but it didn't turn out to be that way, partially because of the weather. But I thought it was an intriguing event. I really did. And it certainly created a lot of controversy. I thought the telecast was lacking a little bit, but that's another subject. And I thought Wyndham Clark did a terrific job in winning his first major, holding it together and getting it to the finish line. Gary, what say you?
You know, it was interesting to watch that thing come to fruition, being that LA North would host an event like that. I remember in the old days, I grew up in Southern Cal, and we used to go over there and play. We played some matches over there, and I played there a lot. And that place was revered in LA, and no one really knew about it. Those gates would not let anybody in there. And I remember some guys talking about the fact that in the old days, why don't you have an Open and a PGA or something? And the membership wanted none of that. They didn't want anybody through those gates to see their hollow ground there. And I don't know whether it was for tax reasons or what. What happened there? Because, as you know, they started spewing about how much per acre that was worth there. So I don't know the property taxes or anything, but everybody got a good look at LA North. They got a good look at the movie stars' homes around there. And by the way, there's no movie stars that were ever allowed into LA North. That was one of their, in their constitution. They would have no entertainers. Randall Scott was the only guy to get in that LA North membership. He proved to the membership. He showed him three movies, I guess, in the meeting with the membership and how bad of an actor he was. And that was his pretense to get in. And he lived above the fourth hole. And that was the house right next to, it was originally Sonny and Cher's, and now it's Lionel Richie's. Anyway, all those homes around there look like that. And I just, to watch this, you know, and you look at it and you can see it for the first time. And it was come a long way since back in the 60s when literally no one would go through those gates. But, Peter, I thought it looked great on television. It's totally different look after Gil Hans got a hold of it. I believe it was in 2010. You and I played it a couple of times. But it was, you know, I love what he did with the bunkering and the fescue grass around there and made it look wild. Cut corners in the bunkers. You know, before we used to play, it was perfect. It was just all the grass was maintained. The branca was there, but you really didn't recognize it. It wasn't as obtruse as it is now. We're running around. It's right next to the greens. So to me, it changed the way the golf course looked on television dramatically, but that's from a guy that played it 100 years ago through the years. I thought it looked great. Peter, architecture, there's a couple of holes there where the balls funnel in the same area. You can't do much about it. I think that's a little goofy. I think that if they got one, they do have one again, don't they? If they got an open there?
Yeah, 16 years.
Well, they got one in
years.
When is it?
Yeah, 16 years from now.
16 years from now. So I'll guarantee you, you know, like on number three, where every ball ends up over that in the left gutter over there, and I think that kind of gets old. With you hit a tee shot, you hit a good one, and now it's 90% chance you're going to get to a pin cut right against the big bunker. So I think a couple of those things will change, but the whole aristocracy of the whole thing. I thought it put the Open on a pretty high level. And that's just from me growing up in Southern Cal and watching that golf course get exposed to the public. I thought it was great.
You know, I thought, Gary, that I had a kind of a epiphany during this tournament in the sense that the sixth hole used to be really, I thought, a classic short hole where you could lay up and you still had a difficult little pitch shot to a very narrow green depth-wise, and you could go over the tree and over the hill and still try to get it on the green from the tee and whatever. But what's changed is the launch monitor and the amount of time that these players are spending dialing in their wedges. I thought the layup became almost matter of fact with no wind and not really firm, hard conditions. These guys are able to dial in their yardages now, plus or minus a couple yards. And so I didn't see any catastrophes from people who elected to lay up. Now, maybe they happened and TV didn't show it, but I thought that hole kind of got neutered a little bit because of launch monitors and range finders that players have been using to help them dial in their wedge distances. I thought that was really striking.
Yeah,
it is interesting.
Was, especially when you don't, you know, use the U.S. Opens, it's bouncy. And if you can't control the first bounce is chaos, then you got to figure out another way to do it. But with the marine layer and everything there, it kind of set down. And Peter, you know, talking about the sixth hole, I remember the original design, that hole, I used to play that hole, and it was, you know where the guys lay up? The green kept going. It was backing.
Right.
Somewhere. I remember playing it there. And then they put that green over there one year up on that hill over there. And I thought it was kind of goofy. But I really enjoyed watching these guys on the tee. And I was trying to figure out who's going to lay up and who wasn't. And I missed just about every time other than Rory and a couple of guys hit it really high. And but I thought it was an interesting play. I like it. Again, I think we can get to the – you know, that thing that's kind of hovering over everybody now in the USGA is the distance the ball goes. All these holes are wedges for these guys again. It's amazing. That golf course, 7,400 yards, and it was always big. And these guys they're playing the first hole from back by the entrance of the clubhouse, which was the old putting green, and you hit it over the rose bushes there. Oh, that was the putting green where they're teeing off from, and it's 570, 80 or something like that. And Rory's hitting 7-iron in there. What, do you have wedges into 8 holes or something like that? That I thought was blatant with the distance these guys are hitting it and how that golf course was reduced to basically drive it and then pitch it.
The firmness of the firmness of the fairways, that golf course did not play 7,400 yards. It played maybe 7,000 yards because of the firmness of the fairways. And with the width that they gave them, players were still able to get 30, 40, 50, 60 yards a roll and keep it in the fairway as opposed to having it find its way into the rough, which was supposed to be the objective, I guess. But the width of the fairways combined with the firmness of the fairways, it didn't play anywhere near 7,400 yards.
Why do you think Why do you think they widened the fairways for the U.S. Open? Why do you think they went out of their curriculum there?
I think that when they come back, if they come back in 16 years, I think you're going to see a different fairway cut. I really do. Especially on a couple of holes, because
why do you think they did it this year?
Say again.
Why do you think they did it this
year? You know, I
have no idea. Like the 18th hole, you know, the 18th hole, you need to screw it in the ground on your tee shot usually in the U.S. Open. What was it, 62 yards wide on the 18th hole?
Yeah, guys, I was, as you guys know, I was on site there last week, and the rumors were that the membership told the USGA, the USGA wanted to pinch down 18, guys, but the membership said no, we're not going to take it out of play for us because they have to grow the rough so much and it would be a lot more difficult for membership to play. They said they gave them two ultimatums. One was don't cut down 18, don't tighten it up. We want to be able to play it. And two was no grandstands behind 18. We want to show off our clubhouse. And when you walk out there and you go, what's going on? Because, yeah, the rough was wide, but we saw Wyndham Clark's drive, and he was able to hit one of the biggest cuts he ever hit and still be in the right side of that fairway. It definitely changed the playing characteristics. And Peter, out there, you could see, you walking on it, you could feel how firm it was, how bouncy it was. So it did play. It played super short in a lot of situations.
You know, another thing, Peter, this what Mike was talking about there, I thought was interesting. You know, the vastness that I took out of that was the fact, you know, the skyboxes and all the corporate stuff was set pretty much away from the activity. And what did they have, 20,000 people there allotted a day? And I think like 14 or 15,000 were in the skyboxes. So you only had about 8 or 9,000 people roaming around that golf course. As you know, it's a hard walk. And they cut off a lot of sides of fairways, didn't they, Mike? You were there.
They did.
Close.
Yeah, they did. It was not a feeling of being at a normal major as far as the number of gallery that was walking around. The skyboxes, there were very few, Peter, there were very few grandstands that were available for general admission. There were lots of chalets or suites that were, and Gary, you're right on. It was like 14 or 15,000 for these corporate suites and hospitality, and only about 8,000 that were allowed to have general admission tickets. And 2,000 of those were members. So there was, getting back, I went back and checked out. There was a great location with a very small grandstand behind the seventh tee, and it's adjacent to the sixth green. So you could kind of see balls flying down there, whether they're layup or going for the green. And you can see guys hitting. One day it was 299 yards, the seventh green, you know, and of course the 11th was playing 297 that same day. That was on, I think that was on Friday when I was there. But it's, there are difficult places to go. There weren't very many people out there. We had to wait about 5 minutes to get up in the grandstand there, but there were few and far between places to walk. They did block off a lot of ways to get out to like 5 and 4. And then even 14 was difficult to get to. And then it got kind of a little bit busy. That one area by the 10th green, you could see the action on 11, and you could kind of peek over and see the 15th green, which is the short par three that gave us three holes in one. But it was not a super friendly, I mean, it was good that there weren't a lot of people if you were lucky enough to be in there, but it wasn't a super easy place to find a place to watch, especially coming in, which is weird. Coming into 18, not a lot of grandstands, not a lot of crowd. I like that they let everybody loose there. It was a cavalry tear down on when Wyndham Clark was coming in. But I thought, oh my gosh, what if he three putts? How are they going to get the people off there for the playoff?
Did you see those two guys looking back? They had no idea. I said, Wyndham turned around and
no looked, warning.
What's going on? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Ricky's there and he's looking around, and his caddy Rick looks around. It's like, what are these guys doing? I don't think, Peter, that They told the players they're going to let the guys encircle the galleries.
Yeah.
The green on 18.
And I mean, God forbid he three putts that. They got to go back and play that hole again in the playoff. But you know, this goes back, Gary, to my assertion that I made years ago, and I got ripped for it. But I'll do it again, probably get ripped again.
Yep.
But I think the USGA needs to stop bastardizing all of these old golf courses in the name of saving par, making par relevant, whatever. And I think they need to go ahead and buy some land on the West Coast, buy some land maybe in the Pinehurst area, and maybe some south of Chicago, whatever. Buy and set up three USGA facilities with 72 holes each, access to the public, and design your own damn golf course for juniors, for women, for seniors, for the PGA Tour competition, the U.S. Opens. Rotate amongst those three. Design the golf course to give them the examination that you want to have. Instead of putting, like at number six at Pebble, instead of putting that fairway bunker 40 yards in the rough because you want to move things over toward the ocean and bastardize all these old great golf courses. Time moves on, right? Just build your own facilities, have your own examination, put hotels there, build your infrastructure, let people be able to make a trek to one of the three, whatever they want, experience the golf courses that the U.S. Open's played on, the U.S. Women's Open's played on, whatever. But it's time to stop bastardizing the old golf courses for the sake of trying to maintain them. They just don't work anymore. And rolling the ball back 10% is not going to change that. It really isn't, because players are getting bigger, stronger, faster. And in 20 years, if they roll it back tomorrow, in 20 years, they'll be hitting it just as far as they are today.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to have to.
That's my rant.
From that rant, it sounds like they're going to have to go to bed with Liv to get all that money to build all these facilities.
fine, go ahead.
Okay.
You know, it's there. Let's do it.
That's another deal. I thought another thing, Peter, that was interesting. We were talking about the last couple of holes, and you know, the whole time. The telecast, and you know, and I'm not on Twitter or anything, but I was hearing the vibe that it was so laid back. There weren't screams and yells and the wild applause and everything else.
Yeah,
this event, and you know, you could see there's only 8,000 or 9,000 people out there walking around, and everybody else is secured in skyboxes. That's not a whole lot of people there at the end. Somehow the sound got all screwed up, and I couldn't hear the announcers, which could be good or bad, whatever side you're on. And I thought, oh, my God, these guys are getting pretty smart. They got the sound guy in there mixing, and he's bringing up the background noise and the applause way above the level that it is, but it drowned out the other. So they had to make a decision. Do we just not let our announcers be heard, like, you know, it's hard to hear them anyway, but they literally drowned them out. And I just wonder if the mix from the trucks, if they ordered that or not, because of all of the bad press they were getting for LA and for the US Open being very laid back, as LA has a tendency to do. It would be interesting. I doubt it. I think it was a mistake in the trucks, but I think it would have been a very good ploy. What do you think to just jack that one right toggle switch up a little bit, you know, like the airplane coming in?
Well, I mean, the audio mix was off all week long, all 4 days for me on my television. And the ambient noise was way up higher, and the announcers, I couldn't hardly hear them. So I think that was either a mistake that they made for four straight days, or that was their game plan, one or the other. But it was rough to deal with, especially on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and I think that maybe that was a ploy, or to try to give the viewer the impression that there was more excitement there. I want to ask you to, with all your years working, CBS Golf Channel, USA Network, Peter, Paul Azinger and a lot of the crew got skewered in social media and online. And I know that's a difficult situation, but it did seem, I don't know if you guys had the same impression, it seemed like Paul, you go out on a limb and you make a call, and yeah, sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong, but it seems like Paul rolled the dice a lot of times and was incorrect coming down the stretch, especially in the back nine with Wyndham Clark. Well, I guess it was started on number nine when you said, you know, the ball was, there's no way that ball's coming back down, and it rolled down to 6 feet and he made a great par there to keep everything going. But what was your impression? How difficult is it for you guys when you were out there calling the action and making a guess, but how much time goes into your preparation and getting out there and seeing what potentially the course will give and what the guys can get away with as far as in certain situations, certain lies, certain positions to get up and down?
Well, I mean, Paul,
well, from, go ahead, Gary,
has done this for a long time. And he was out there in the golf course looking at it, and you try to look at, you don't know where they're going to put the pins, especially on a format like this where they never used a golf course before. So, you know, you're guessing where they're going to, this is in practice when you're out there walking around and trying to get the idea of the golf course, talking to the players, you're looking at this sand. Some sand allows you to spin the ball, some sand doesn't. Then you, you know, look at runoffs from bunkers in the greens, all that stuff. So he's got all that information. You know, and he screwed it up there. But, you know, the good thing, like, and I'm just going to give you our broadcast team when Peter and I were there. If you made a mistake on the air, the other guys would jump on you immediately. You kind of made fun of it, and it didn't sit.
Yeah.
Paul Steele sat there. No one did anything. It just, it was a mistake, and it compounded again. Whatever. That's fine. You make mistakes. But the idea, yeah. Excuse me, I'm joking. The idea is to have a broadcast team that can identify that, make light of it, make light of your announcer, but don't let something sit there, you know, like a festering boil. And everybody looks at it. You gotta have fun with it. I know it's, you know, I know it's a major. I know it's the Open, but you know, it's like Zinger, yeah. What the hell are you looking at there? He just hit it 10 feet. You said,
I will say this. 20. I'll say this, Gary. Had you made that comment on nine on a CBS telecast, it would have taken somewhere between 5 and 7 seconds for somebody, whoever, to say, Gary, really? Nice call.
Yeah.
You know, just, and you would make light of it and you would pass it off and it would be gone. But, and in defense of the announcers,
yeah,
there's a lot of hours of airtime. And whether you like it or not, and this was always a complaint I had at CBS, when by the time you roll around to Sunday afternoon and the climax of the tournament, you want your energy up high. You want enthusiasm in your voice. You want to make it exciting, and you're worn out. You're absolutely worn out from meetings, from 4 days of cable coverage and network coverage and the hours on the air. And Zinger sounded tired to me. And I understand that, because I've been there and done that. So have you, Gary. It's difficult, especially on a Sunday afternoon, to get your energy level up. And that's what they were – I thought they were missing a lot of that on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and you know, again, we can get into the complexities of putting a team together. But yeah, a team comes together, an ounce team comes together with a bunch of individuals that have different – you know, the role players. And each guy's got a role, and one of those guys in your announce team has got to be the energy guy. It's got to be the guy that keeps it keeps a high level of energy throughout the telecast, through commercials. Commercials in this business are big,
yep,
for the broadcast team, because you go off air, and now if everybody just sits back and doesn't say anything, you come back on the air with that, you know, that a dull feeling. So you got to have an energy guy to just take those situations and jack up the other guys. And And that just comes with putting a good team together. Not to say they're not a good team or CBS isn't, but you've got to know who to plug in and what they do and what they're good at. And everybody does their role. And if they do, you're going to have a good broadcast. Whether something like that happens to Zinger, and it blatantly sits there, and then lets you, the audience, make the judgment on him. And the judgment's going to be 99% against Zinger because, you know, it was a missed call and he compounded it. So yeah. Got to have somebody making fun of it and going, yeah, you're an idiot now. Okay, I am, yeah. I got a shot. Why? Well, my bunker shots. I was playing from a closed club face and it rolled out all the time. Blah, blah, blah. He just, whatever. But you get inside the right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think.
Last thing on the Open.
Go ahead, Peter.
Last thing on the Open, and I want to give props to Wyndham Clark for holding it together. It's only his third U.S. Open he's played in. It's only his second win on the PGA Tour and his first major, obviously. But I thought he did a terrific job of handling the punches that were thrown at him, especially on the back nine. He counterpunched. He brought it home. He got it done. And I think in social media, there were a couple guys out there that went back and tried to troll him and get not even texts that he put out on Twitter, but likes that he had. And they're trying to paint him as some sort of, you know, right-wing conspiracy theorist or whatever. I mean, really, it's not even been 24 hours since a guy wins his first major and you got to go after him on Twitter. That's bullshit. I mean, complete bullshit. And those people need to be called out. Let's celebrate a young guy winning. He's a really, really good guy. My interactions with him have been nothing but nice. And give him his at least 24 hours to bask in the victory of a U.S. Open championship. But no, we got to go after him. It's such crap.
That's why I'm not on Twitter.
That's my second. That's my second rant.
You know, it's amazing, Peter. Too, you know, and he's a member of our club out there at the Rock, and I see him out there. And he was out there last week. He and Homa were out. In fact, they went through us. We told them, no, you can't go through, and they just went by us anyway. Tuesday, we were a foursome. Wyndham was out there hitting balls. I never saw him. Practicing a short game, and it was one of the great displays of a short game I've ever seen coming down to the end, and it throughout the whole tournament. I had no idea. I know the word on the street was he's a hell of a player, and he was a little brain dead on the golf course was his MO, and I think he got that fixed with his the sports psychologist he's working with, her name escapes me right now. But she's done a hell of a job with him because he had an arsenal with him in his golf bag, and he couldn't finish. He couldn't think around the golf course. He was he got as mad at himself as anybody you've ever seen on a golf course, Peter. And you know all the guys that have. And he has quieted that riot down beyond belief. And boy, it really showed. But I didn't know his short game was that gifted. My God. Some of those shots he was hitting down the end when, you know, you have no control of the club face. Your hands are shaking so bad. And he's hitting these delicate little pitches, you know, and that two-putt on the last hole. You don't two-putt from 60 feet to win the Open and hit it 6 inches from the hole. You can't do that. It was pretty spectacular for a guy that's a newbie at the business.
Hey, Peter, I want to ask you, Julie Ellion.
Let's give Miss Drops.
Yeah, Julie Ellion is the sports psychologist. Yeah. But I want to ask the two of you real quick before we get off of Wyndham Clark. One of the cool things you could hear and he was asked about was his caddy would keep telling him, be an athlete before he hit shots. Like all day, it was be an athlete. And I want to, and I guess that's from his sports psychologist, but also lets him kind of get into that mode. Peter, how you've coached major champions. Gary, you won a major championship on the Champions Tour. How do you prepare? How do you get your mind ready to deal with those things that he dealt with so well going down the stretch?
Well, it's conditioning. And generally speaking, when you work with a sports psychologist or you're trying to modify your mental game on the golf course, you've got triggers. And there's lots of different triggers that can be used. I used to work with a guy named Don Green, and if you got angry, he made you put a if you were like Max Homa and you had a newborn child, he'd make you put a picture of the newborn child inside of your yardage book, so that when you got angry, you flip it open and you'd look at it, it would trigger the right response. Saying you're an athlete, I think, is probably a trigger to get him to not really worry about what's going on. Just be an athlete and hit shots. And that was the way that they handled that.
You know, the preparation comes prior, whether it's weeks, months, years. You know, you adapt to how to best go about you playing a tournament. And then as it ramps up and the pressure gets more and more with the more prestige a tournament has, you go back to the basics of what got you there, and you keep doing it. And a guy like Wyndham is a very athletic player. He doesn't have a coach. He trains in an interesting way. If he's hooking it too much one time, he'll go out in the range and slice it until he can't hook it anymore. And if he's slicing it, he goes to the range and he'll sit there and hook it until he doesn't. But he doesn't slice anymore. So he just finds a neutral position and then lets his athletic ability take over. And that's what their mantra was back and forth. Just be athletic. You know, there's the ball. See the ball. Hit the ball. Go get it. And do what you've been doing. He turned it around in Charlotte when he won there. And it just carried over. And he's been playing great. The combination him playing well, understanding where his ball's going, where his club face is, and then the mental part of it, understanding how to compete and get through that with all of his ability. And he did it at the best time possible to win the U.S. Open. Well done.
Yeah, congrats to Wyndham Clark. An interesting U.S. Open, to say the least. Peter and Gary, thanks for being with us. When we come back, Costas and McCord off their rockers. We're going to have a great tip from Peter, and we're going to talk about where we're going in the next few episodes. It's going to be a lot of fun. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Off Their Rockers.
Strokes gain stats are finally easy with the most 5-star rated golf app in the country. SwingU accurately and objectively provides feedback across driving, approach shots, chipping and pitching, bunker play, and putting. Easily identify your strengths and weaknesses and laser focus your practice time so you can quickly shave strokes off your score. Download SwingU and start owning your game today.
If I had one drill that I was limited to for the rest of my teaching career, it would be probably this one, throwing clubs. Not in anger, but in a desire to get the proper movement of my body, the proper control of my hands and arms, the proper sequencing of my swings. Now, rather than me taking my clubs and throwing them, although I do have some old ones at the golf course that we take back, come down, release, and throw down the fairway. Most people, when they do this, be careful. It's really a dangerous drill, so you want to get out in an open field somewhere. When they try to release it down the fairway, they're holding the club so tightly that it ends up going back over here someplace. So that's no good. This will help you with your grip pressure as well. So I've got these training clubs here, and I'm going to show you what it's like. I make a good full backswing. I come down. I have to start with my lower body, I have to clear, I have to stay back with my upper body and have to release my arms down the line. When you get good at this and when you get comfortable throwing the club down the fairway, you can start to throw it at your target and with the trajectory that you want to see on your shots. So if I want to get the driver going a little bit higher and a little bit farther, I'm not going to throw it this way, I'm going to stay back here and throw it up. So it's, again, take it back, throw it, and you'll get the really good feeling of posting up against your left leg, rotating your body. And when you watch this from down the line, you're going to see how my arms get back in front of my body. My body doesn't get out in front. Then I get back, throw it. Then all you have to do at that point, pick up a golf club and try to replicate that sensation or that feel. Keep the grip pressure as light as you had it. Trust me, you won't let go. Swing it back, throw the club down the fairway, except you're not. You're going to be throwing the ball down the fairway. It's an awesome, awesome drill.
Thanks so much for watching. Costas and McCord off their rockers. Peter, Gary, and I appreciate your views. Make sure to subscribe, to listen, to like, to share with golf buddies, and hit that notification bell here on YouTube so you can always be notified when we've got a new episode. We'll have one coming out very soon with the great comedian Lewis Black. And remember, you'll have more tips, more interviews, more fun right here on Costas and McCord off their rockers. Thanks for watching.